Welcome to the Best Science Medicine Podcast, BS without the BS.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 394th episode of the Best Science Medicine Podcast. My name is James McCormack, and I'm a professor with the Faculty of Pharmaceutical Sciences at the University of British Columbia.
And I'm Mike Allen. I'm a family doctor and the director of program and practice support at the College of Family Physicians of Canada and a professor at the University of Alberta. And today on our podcast, we have two members from Edmonton with us, Tina and Joey. Take it away.
Okay. Hi, good morning. I'm Tina Kronik, an associate professor in the Department of Family Medicine here at the beautiful University of Alberta.
Yeah, that's right. And my name is Joey Tan. I'm a pharmacist that works with the peer group. We're providing knowledge translation and education.
And today we're going to be talking about omega-3s because people just can't get enough of this. We've talked a lot about omega-3s and how they don't do a whole heck of a lot for cardiovascular disease or pretty much anything like that. And yet they still are very, very popular because there is a mechanism and they have something to do with fish and, you know, you can't go wrong with fish. So you guys, an interesting topic where you guys looked at all the evidence for omega-3s for dry eye, because dry eye is an issue. Although I was just recently at an overdiagnosis conference, and one of the examples of what they're saying is that it's being way over marketed. It is a whole concept of dry eyes, but for some people it clearly does affect quality of life. And so wouldn't it be great if we had something that works? And so you guys looked at the evidence for oral omega-3s to improve the symptoms of dry eye.
Yeah, that's right. So to start off in itself, dry eye in itself, it's hard to evaluate the symptoms because there's so many ways to do it. And that's why it's so hard when we're looking at this evidence, because oftentimes when you go to conferences or listen, you know, to an article, they'll quote you a bunch of objective measures that you don't necessarily look at or pay attention to. Whereas we as clinicians want to know about the symptoms. And what we found was, in terms of omega-3, there's this one RCT that recently came out this year in the New England Journal. And what they found was, when we were looking at the symptoms, those patient important outcomes in terms of dry eyes, there didn't seem to be any benefit. And when they actually took one step further in that they looked at the objective measures, those surrogate outcomes we kind of know and love, they didn't find many changes in those either. And that was a little bit different, because for the longest time, there have been a lot of RCTs that said the opposite, that omega-3s did work. So when we kind of read this New England Journal article, we're kind of at a loss at what to really say, because there's a bulk of evidence that's been around for a long time that says, yes, it works. And then there's this one really, really good RCT that says it doesn't work. So kind of where do we fall, right? Right,
Tina? Yeah. Yeah, so we have had people asking us to do this tool for a while, but we've always just avoided it because it's such a quagmire. But what prompted us was this new RCT that came out in the New England Journal that asked us, we thought was a relevant question. It was a good size. And when we look at the RCTs that have been done historically, they've been much smaller. And like Joey alluded to, the problem is there's so many outcome measures that you can look at with dry eye. It's probably similar to, Mike, what you found when you looked at colds. You know, how many can you measure a runny nose? Many, it turns out, and that's similar with dry eye. And so many of the smaller studies might look at multiple outcomes and find one that's statistically significant and report on that. And so what we found, we even argued amongst ourselves as we did this tool, but the best quality RCT, the largest one that looked at outcomes we thought were relatively important. So for instance, the New England Journal of Medicine trial looked at this OSDI score, which is sort of a measurement of multiple symptoms around dry eye. And it's on a scale of from 0 to 100. And they found that those patients who were given omega-3 supplements, so these are oral supplements that they would take on a daily basis, did not have any improvement above what you would see in placebo. So in those groups. So actually the the supplement group improved by about 13 points and the placebo group improved by about 12 points. And it wasn't statistically significant, which suggesting that really there's no significant benefit seen. I don't know if you want to run through like some of the smaller trials that were, you looked at, Joey, or?
Yeah, no, that's definitely. So with the smaller trials, the one that came out that actually most commonly gets referenced in a lot of the conferences and a lot of education material is a one RCT with about 100 patients. And this trial looked at specifically something called meibomian gland dysfunction. So that kind of relates to those lipid secretion glands that we have in our eyes, and if they get blocked, you would have meibomian gland dysfunction. And in this population, they found that omega-3 versus placebo, there was a statistical improvement in both the symptom measurement that Tina was talking about, the OSD, ocular surface disease index, as well as some of the other surrogate outcomes. So how fast does your tear evaporate when it's on your eye is one other example. And this one, the biggest drawback on this RCT was that the authors were actually being funded by this pharmaceutical company called PRN. It's called Physician Recommended Nutrition or Nutritionals. And actually, I often hear a lot of this be advertised in the conferences as kind of the next upcoming, and a lot of their funding goes into prompting this one RCT out to clinicians kind of around the country. Four smaller RCTs came from this one individual from northern India. His name is Rahul, and it was funny, every single RCT he did, it showed a benefit. But the only drawback with this one was in every single RCT he did, he used a scale that was not the OSDI. It was something called the dry eye symptom scale. This is a scale that we didn't see really in any other RCT. And it seemed like he made this scale up himself, and he copyrighted the scale as well. So we felt it was a little fishy, but when you actually look into
fishy... nice pun given the context.
when you look at his background, and Tina did extensive research, as we all know.
I really did, yeah.
Found no relationship to any financial groups, no industry funding. He seemed like a pretty clean guy. We just don't know why he chose that scale or created his own scale to measure the symptoms.
Yeah. And as I'm looking at just some of the information, like the first trial that you're talking about of 100 people, so, you know, this is a classic example of being able to show a statistical difference, but whether or not it's really clinically relevant, because the OSDI thing that you're talking about, the ocular surface disease index, is a 100-point scale. And, you know, we've had so many different scales there. I think the Alzheimer's scale is up there. It may not be quite 100. It may be 70, if I remember correctly, but it may not be. Yeah. Or the St. George's Respiratory Questionnaire. And what these guys showed is that, you know, there is a statistical difference, but I think if I'm looking at the numbers right, it's about an a 6-point difference between placebo and the omega-3. And 6 points on a 100-point scale is tricky to talk about the clinically... whether that's even minimally clinically important. And I think you guys suggest that you need a change of at least 7 to 10 for that. So that's the problem with all of these. The problem is when people talk about these things, you can present a study saying they work, but then you almost have to always look into what work means.
Yeah, this is an interesting area. Again, I think like Joey spoke to, that this one RCT of 100 patients has been widely promoted. So it's industry funded, widely promoted. And I don't know, many of you might be like myself, when I first heard the idea is omega-3s for dry eyes, it seemed sort of out of left field. Where does that, what is like the new home for omega-3s? And where does that idea come from? Well, it comes from places like this. So a small RCT that finds a statistical but probably not clinically important benefit, and then is widely promoted.
Yeah.
And then it takes, you know, and again, like that BS factor, now where you're going to have well-designed trials that are actually evaluating this. The first of which I think is that one in the New England Journal of Medicine that show actually it probably doesn't make a difference. Yes.
And it's not, you don't need, actually, you shouldn't need large randomized controlled trials to actually study this if something is really effective. Like if you're taking people who already have symptoms and a particular treatment is even, you know, moderately effective, and you have a reasonable scale that you can use to look at it, and even if it's just a quality of life scale, you could probably, if the differences are at least, you know, moderately clinically important, you could easily get away with a study of maybe 30 or 40 people and show statistical difference in them and all that. And so whenever you look at these sort of trials that are looking at, you know, 100 or 200 people, it's telling you that they actually are not looking for a big effect. And then you get into the whole issue of what you guys have been talking about, again, so eloquently, in that you might be able to show a difference in a bit of a scale, but what does it really mean? And I think that's kind of the bottom line with all this evidence for dry eye, at least for the omega-3s anyway.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, and it's funny. So when this article gets published, or it is published now, we know we're going to get some flack because a lot of the times the diagnosis of dry eye isn't even clear. We look at the guidelines and they say, you know, including the OSDI, you need to look at this tear breakup time, like how fast does that tear evaporate, or you can look at a Schirmer score, or et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know if it's just because no one really knows how to diagnose that.
Or I know, in primary care, it's diagnosed by the patient going, "My eyes are dry."
Yeah.
I was gonna say, exactly. I have dry eyes. Okay.
Okay, dry eyes is the diagnosis. Let me look at your eyes. They look red a bit. Were you smoking marijuana? No. Yeah. Okay, then you have dry eyes.
A bit enlightening going through all this evidence, because there are actually numerous scales and, yeah, like tear breakup times you can measure that I, you know, in clinical practice for 15 years have never heard of.
James uses them all the time.
Yeah.
And he uses them all the time when patients come in. "I'd like a refill of my Tylenol." "Oh, how's your tear breakup time?"
Exactly. And whenever I have to do a podcast with Mike, I'm constantly in tears.
I was going to say, maybe this is the solution to dry eyes.
It would be, because I have Mike told you, you know, about his intracranial hemorrhage that he had a little while ago. So I'm going to, you know, talk about my problems, which are, you know, much more severe. I do get occasionally, it's not trivial. I get a bit of ocular rosacea. There you go. It is annoying and it bugs you, and you try these, you know, these tear lubricants and everything, and it just doesn't seem to do anything. And, it's always frustrating, but I would never go down the route of these omega-3s, especially now that you guys have shown me the wisdom of what we're trying to do here. And I love the fact that you guys are only able to diagnose stuff when the patient tells you what it is.
that's when my diagnoses are the strongest, James.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
I think I have arthritis in my knee. Arthritis in knee.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like most of medicine. You say, "Yeah, my knee really hurts," and you know, and then you go, "You have osteoarthritis," which basically means your knee hurts.
It's just, that's why we use those fancy words, James.
Yeah, exactly. So go ahead, Tina.
I was just going to say, you know, like the one study that I don't think was done, which I think would be fabulous, kind of like studies we used to see with acne, where you just gave the patient the intervention and then the placebo, and then you ask them, "Are your eyes dry anymore?"
Yeah, or do you feel any better?
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, how do you feel? Because we
that's
have all
crazy. Scales.
But, you know, it just, are you better? You know, and I think, I don't know if that wasn't asked because the answer would be no. Mm-hmm. But simple, really, you could answer this. And the other thing, I guess we added in this tool is just the the idea of pricing, right? So omega-3 supplementation, like you have to take this daily for months on end. It's not cheap. Mm-hmm. And compared to even just artificial lubricants or what have you, something to take into consideration. So it's not an entirely harmless intervention.
And I think, and in defense, a little bit of the research is that they they try to make the assessment as objective as possible. And so,
yeah, for sure.
You know, and there is nothing wrong with that. But I totally agree with you. They should also add in the who gives a crap scale. Like, does it actually make you feel any? Does it actually improve what you're dealing with? And here's where we also run into the problem. If you look at the changes that you see in the scales, is that in the placebo group, the scale changes enough that you would go, that is a clinically important difference. So,
yeah. Oh yeah, the placebo is a big difference.
Yeah.
It's a big difference.
And that's just and it's almost exclusively the natural history of what's going on and the waxing and waning and regression to the mean and all that sort of stuff. So the problem with this is that you may have people who will swear by these things. And the problem is they're probably just swearing by the fact that something has changed. And it's probably not what they're doing. And so that's why it's so important to sort of do on off and all that sort of stuff. But in some people, it might be benefiting, but it's very difficult for you guys to figure that out.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I actually heard even some clinicians trying to refute the New England Journal by saying, oh, maybe olive oil works. And that's why there's no difference being shown. Right. So it's funny, right? So people are starting to come up with their own conclusions or creating these rebuttals that I don't know make sense. I tried to look into whether olive oil.
I thought you were going to say you were trying. I'm using olive oil right now, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
My eyes are still dry. Yeah.
Even in the literature, because it came up as a question, does olive oil work? And I couldn't find a single thing saying olive oil works dry eye. So people are really pleading, right?
Yeah, special pleading. You didn't find the answer that I wanted. So here, I'm going to come up with an excuse why you didn't. Not because the drug doesn't actually work, but I'm going to look for something as an alternative to blame the study.
Yeah. And you see that, that a lot.
You continue my belief.
You see that wrong. It's like, you didn't use the right dose, or you didn't use the natural version, or this is the special shark cartilage version of it, and you know all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we should be eating fish, not actually taking it as a pill, or we should be whatever. And Tina's right. This came up, and it seemed like a bit out of left field. We were actually presenting a Jeopardy, and one of the topics that came up in a Jeopardy type presentation was around omega-3s, and then someone called out from the audience, "What about its use in dry eyes?" And I thought the person was kidding. I kind of joke that, you know, omega-3s are a treatment looking for a condition. They're looking to find something that they work in because people believe in them so strongly. And I'm sure when this is finally dismissed, if the evidence is going in the direction we think, there will be something else that it works for. Toenail fungus, subarachnoid hemorrhage, who knows?
You never know. Yeah, and it's like every vitamin that we've ever studied,
it's got to be something it works for.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the advantage of it is, other than the biggest side effect of all of these things is cost, but it is really tricky. So this is the best evidence we have to date. It's unlikely that you're going to have another, even if they do another study that shows benefit. What you're going to have to do is tease out, is it clinically important? So again, I doubt that we need even another study of this. We pretty much have an answer that it probably doesn't do much if anything. Now, when you guys make that, you know, official and, you know, intensive diagnosis of dry eye, what have you guys been recommending before? I mean, basically just some tear lubricants and stuff like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
You start there for sure. And if it's real... So some people have serious conditions,
oh, right? Absolutely.
Like a syndrome and stuff like that. And so these that can be associated with this. And sometimes they require referral depending on the condition. So generally to ophthalmology, but sometimes to rheumatology for some conditions that have more severe background. But the average run-of-the-mill dry eyes are not, are managed with over-the-counter treatments for the most part.
Yeah, and even they are suspect.
Right, which is part of the reason we're searching again, right? An area of medicine where we have trouble solving the problem, so people are searching to find something that might work. Mm-hmm. So I understand that part of it too, but usually it's just over the counter lubricants.
And then as you got in the tools of practice, hot compresses, and environmental changes, and blah blah blah. And again, from my own personal experience, I have no idea if, I mean, I tried a couple of those things because it was just annoying me, and I don't know if they worked at all, and mm-hmm. I don't have it right now, so you know, it's kind of a weird thing. So anything else you guys want to talk about on this?
I guess the last point is I think part of the reason we can't change a lot of the things we do is because of where we live, right? Because mm-hmm. those in Alberta, it's a dry place here. Yeah. We're going to get dry, and we all can't move to Vancouver and be like James.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We're stuck there.
Although we had such bad forest fires, we couldn't see more than about 5 feet in front of us for a while here in Vancouver with all of the smoke. I mean, it wasn't quite that bad here in Vancouver, but in some places. And I'm sure that affected people's dry eyes, if anything. But
We should bring up, there is one important backstory to this tools for practice, and that is, Joey, you have a really significant conflict of interest.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, my significant other is an optometrist as well. Is that the
Yeah, that's it.
She had a comment on omega-3.
She did, and she actually was the one who didn't believe me when I told her this.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with evidence.
Yeah, it's just one of the things. Like in school, she was trained to use omega-3s. Guidelines are trained to use omega-3s, and all her friends use omega-3s.
Yeah, no, it sounds crazy, but it's not, that's the real issue that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. And it's not like we're mm-hmm. saying that they're wrong and we're right or anything like that, even if we do in our own little heads we say that, but it's really not. It's because, you know, it's this is the problem with all of the, you know, things like guidelines and what people have used and all that sort of stuff. And all we're saying is when you look at the best available evidence, it doesn't appear to do much of anything. That's all we're saying. It may be the evidence is flawed. It may be that, you know, the trials were inappropriately done and so on. But, and you know, and Tina and all you guys, we've seen this over years and years and years, is this is just the best available evidence. It may literally change tomorrow if we get a really well-designed trial. And so all we're trying to do is say, this is the best available evidence and all of the nuances and limitations of it. And we're just trying to help you guys sort of make a decision that's not just, oh, let's try this.
But this is also driven by the fact that, you know, Joey's significant other learned this before we had a really good high-level study.
Yeah, no, true.
And so, you know, things are changing, and it takes us a while to adopt. I mean, A1C targets are a perfect example of this, right? Mm-hmm. We had an absolute belief system in place based on some cohort studies and extrapolations from other RCTs, and it was entirely wrong. And it took people, the Canadian guidelines had all the evidence when they rewrote them, I think it was 2008, mm-hmm. and they just stuck to their old rules because they couldn't adjust to the change.
No, it's really interesting. And that's, you know, that's why we try and do this, and it does occasionally get us into trouble, apparently even on a personal level. And but I'm sure we've all had those experiences, right? We have colleagues or friends or family who swear by this stuff, and then you come across, you know, kind of like in a jerky way, and you know, some of it's warranted, I suppose, but it really is, this is the best we can do with what we know, and that we're not saying you can't use it, we're just saying we don't have the evidence really to support it. So yeah, the whole thing's depressing, and then they don't work, antidepressants don't work either, so there you go. or they don't work really as well as we thought. So anything else you guys want to add?
The take-home message is,
Yeah.
The take home message is that Joey's going to be sleeping on the couch for the next little while.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So anything else that we want to talk about? Anything to do with the dry eyes or anything else in the world of evidence? I hear nothing, so I think we'll leave it at that. Just very quickly, the PIPE conference is coming up when?
October 19th and 20th. So coming up quite quickly, and hope you register soon. Spots may be limited by the time this podcast is aired, but you still get to meet James, which
worth the price of admission.
If you get in free.
Yeah, if you get in free, or I'll pay you to attend. And then we have our course in Vancouver, May 3 and May 4. And we would love it if you would attend that. And so check out all our podcasts, all the videos that we do. And most of what we do is on the website, therapeuticseducation.org, and our CVD calculator and our pain calculator. And there's links to all of those things on our websites, and we've talked about them in previous podcasts. So I don't think we have anything else to sell. So thanks as always for listening.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.